Hey friends, I'm so glad to have you guys back for another episode of the OT for Life podcast today. And joining us on the show, we have Andy Nielsen. Andy is a current OT student at A.T. Still University in Mesa, Arizona, and is actually out doing his first level two fieldwork as we speak. We chat about how his career in business has led him to becoming an OT, and his current project that he's working on, which is a website called OT Growth, that aims to assist pre-occupational therapy students, current occupational therapy students, and occupational therapy practitioners to reach their next career goals. In the episode, we hear all about how Andy designed his life with intention and purpose to foster flexibility and freedom, to spend more time with his family and friends, as well as to contribute to society in a meaningful way. I can't wait to share this episode with you guys, so let's get down to business.
If you're interested in occupational therapy, this is the place for you. This show aims to explore our profession by sharing who we are and what we do. Because for us, occupational therapy is more than just a job. Hi, I'm Sarah. Welcome to OT for Life.
Hey, Andy, how are you doing today?
I am actually tired, really tired. End of the first full week of my first level two field work, but I'm happy, happy and tired.
Well, that's good. I agree with you. I kind of feel the same way right now. We're recording this at the end of the day on Friday, so end of the week. I'm tired. I've had some long days, so I completely get where you're coming from right now. And I'm really curious to hear, how was your first week of your first level two field work?
It was actually really good. The first couple of days were kind of long for me. I mean, going from the classroom environment to a 8 or 9 hour day it seems like a lot. But after the first few days, it went by pretty quick. And it's just a real privilege to be working with some of the kiddos that I'm getting to observe right now.
Because you said you're in pediatrics right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And the way that your school has it set up, did you do all your classwork and then you do field work back to back?
Yeah, basically we have 2 months. We have April and May with a couple final classes. And then, so we'll do this one. April, May, we'll have a couple final classes. Then they're going to like graduate us without technically being done, and then we'll do our last field work.
Got it. It's always so interesting because every school does it just slightly different. And so when I went through school, well, they do it differently now. When I did it, first level two was during the summer. My second level two was my part-time. So when I graduated in May, I was done. But most of my classmates all had the second summer that they had to do their second level two. So I was like completely, totally wonky schedule.
Yeah, I know. I'm kind of grateful I don't go right into the next one immediately. I have 2 months to have some time with the baby.
You're right. So it feels good to get back into kind of doing some stuff after sitting in class all day, every day for the past couple years.
Bit of a focus on, hey, I mean, I'm like reading the goals that's been written for a lot of the kids and just trying to get it in my head, like the syntax and how I would do it, and trying to focus in on what I'm going to be responsible for, I guess.
I hear the hesitation in your voice there.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't really know yet what's really going to happen, but I'm taking it as it comes pretty well, I think.
I think it's going to be pretty cool to have this podcast actually happening right now, because I'm sure you're going to look back after even just like a couple weeks and you're going to be like, wow, I've learned so much and I've already come so far. And that's what I try to tell all my students, especially with the level twos, that like change happens so fast. I mean, from a day to day to a minute, the amount of just growth and progress that happens in a level two, it's like, it's crazy.
Yeah, no, I agree. Absolutely.
So I'm really curious. And when we spoke the other day, I like just kept wanting to like jump in and ask questions. I was like, no, I'm gonna save it for the interview. But I am so curious about how, about your background and how you came into the field of occupational therapy, because I think you have a very unique path that led you here.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So long story short, I was a business, kind of on the business track in college. And I was thinking, all right, well, I like business. I have, you know, some natural tendencies toward that end. So I thought, all right, I'll get a business degree. And, you know, that's exactly what I ended up doing. At one point, I thought I was going to do medical school, turned into optometry school. And eventually I discovered OT after I had already graduated from business school. So my first year out of college was working for a startup in a business services role. Essentially, I was cold calling lots of businesses, like 90 to 100 phone calls a day. And then that ended up turning into a role with a software as a service company where I was selling software. And as time went on, I was like, am I going to work in a cubicle the rest of my life? Or what am I doing? I did so well in school. I was probably like 3.7, 3.8 GPA in college. I got a 4.0 in high school. So I was, you know, pretty, you know, on paper, a great student by all sense of the word that way. But when I was kind of reviewing where I was at, I'm like, I'm calling people on the phone trying to drum up business, and nothing wrong with that. That's a great, great field for a lot of people. But for me, I was, you know, there was a lack of fulfillment. I was like, what am I going to do with my life? And I continued to search, as I already said, like, I didn't want to do medical school, didn't want to do optometry school. So I was digging.
I want to jump in here because I have questions. So you started in business, but did you always feel like, going back before you were like working the cubicle and had that realization, did you always feel like business was for you? Like, what drew you to business? Or did you feel like you always had this kind of medical inclination, but you just kind of ended up in business and then went down that path?
Oh, yeah. Great question. I think it started early in my life. One of the early stories when I was a teenager, saw a bunch of records from my dad on the shelf one day. And I was like, these are probably pretty cool, you know? I want to listen to these. And we didn't have a turntable. My dad didn't have a turntable at the time, but he'd still kept, you know, the whole set. So I thought, well, I'll do a little research. Got on the internet and ended up finding a machine that would allow a person to transfer records to CDs. And I was like, I wonder if there's other people like my dad that would want this kind of like on a CD rather than a record that they may not have a player for anymore. So that was kind of the start of my first little business. So I did that for a little bit and made a little bit of money while I was doing homework. So that was cool and just kind of got me onto the entrepreneurial path of thinking. So that kind of started there and stayed throughout college. No matter what I was doing, I was like, I know I need a real, like, quote unquote, a real job to support a family, because that's what I've always really wanted the most, is just a good family lifestyle. And so, like, one part of my mind was split into, hey, what am I going to do for my career, my job? And then the other half is like, how am I going to foster the entrepreneur side of Andy's brain, essentially? And since then, it's really just been growing and learning more and trying to mesh and integrate, like, I guess I'll call them the two sides of my brain that way. Because I kind of still think that way. Like, here's my real legitimate career that people respect. And, you know, here's my crazy projects that might seem stupid or dumb or whatever you want to call it. But maybe they'll turn into something.
I think that's so fascinating because I read a lot and I listen to a lot of other podcasts that interview entrepreneurs and their stories. And I feel like majority of them always have something that they did when they were younger that made them, they were either selling stuff on the schoolyard or mowing lawns, or like they kind of always had like a little side hustle and they always had this entrepreneurial mindset. And I always get a kick out of listening to the stories because I look at my own journey and I never saw that in myself. I was never one of those people that was like business minded in the least. And I mean, I guess like the only thing I ever did was I always like kind of went against the norm, but it wasn't like, I don't know. I guess I just never considered it entrepreneurial. And so as soon as you started talking, I was like, oh my goodness. Like, yeah, you had this from a very like early on age.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't really think about it that way, but looking back and reflecting on my life, I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of little things that have kind of weaved themselves in and out of my life that I guess gave me that entrepreneurial bug that people call it.
Well, and I think it's really cool too, because, and I speak for myself on this one, I had to learn a lot about business while I was setting up my practice and setting up my company and like as I was going through it. And I feel like a lot of people that start their own businesses within the world of occupational therapy, they don't have any background in business. It's just, I love hearing how business starts to intertwine with occupational therapy. And I feel like people that have a business background, we need more people that have that mindset within OT to continue to kind of push us forward and grow.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think so, 100%.
Right? You probably see a lot of it because you're like, wait, I already know all of that. And all of us that don't know the business side, we're like, wait, what? What are you talking about? I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, every discipline has its own language. OT has its own language. What I find interesting is that even the people that don't have the knowledge, there's a lot of them who do start. One of the people that I follow, he's always just talking about just start, you know. You have to start somewhere, you know, without experience most of the time. And the only way to get that is starting, you know. And when we do that and we take action, as you said, is the case for your own projects and business, you know, it's often better to learn it as you're doing the project. Yeah, there's a lot of things, you know, you can save yourself a lot of money, time, effort, setting things up right the first time. But it's really not a bad way to go about things to just be like, hey, this is my project. I'm going to learn as I go, rather than, hey, let me spend all this time learning and spending money learning and doing all these things and kind of like the preparing to learn phase. Then I'm going to start my business and it doesn't tend to work out as well. So I have a lot of respect for people who learn the other way as well, because I feel like in my own life, I'm like, I've spent a lot of money on learning business stuff, but a lot of times I don't feel like I've actually had a project going along with the learning.
I feel like you learn so much as you just do it. Like, I love what you just said right there, because it's at least true for me and kind of what I went through. And I know that if I would have thought that I needed to know everything before I start, I still wouldn't have started, like, to this day. I'm constantly learning something new, something I didn't know before about business, about marketing, about promoting, about anything at all. Like, basically outside of our clinical role, outside of the clinical knowledge that I have. And I love the words that you said, just start. Because, yeah, if you don't start, you will never know what you could be. And sometimes you have to fail in order to learn those skills to be able to kind of overcome them and then move forward.
Yeah, no, exactly. And kind of going back to that point that I made, if anyone's interested in, there's a book called The Power of Starting Something Stupid by a guy named Richie Norton. And I've followed him for a long time, but I was attracted kind of to the lifestyle he was leading. And he leads a very family first lifestyle, but he's working very hard as well doing his own projects. And, you know, I take little bits and pieces from him, from other people that I've worked with in, you know, free capacities, whether that's YouTube or actual $1,000 courses or more. I feel like I've gone across the spectrum, but it's so true what you said. It's just like, just start. And like, it doesn't matter if you're like super embarrassed, you feel like I'm so unprepared. OT in and of itself is a huge barrier to entry for folks wanting to do a project with an OT kind of flavor, I'll call it. I don't know if that's the right word, but
I like it. Sounds good.
Like when you're an OT, you already have like a whole world, a whole niche that you're kind of into already. So you have so much advantage because, you know, the business world, the marketing world is very competitive. And one of the things that people are often taught is, hey, you need to pick a niche, you know, a good niche that, you know, will allow you to make a little bit of money, to serve people. And I've reflected on that and I'm like, it's so cool that OT has like so much opportunity and they're already like super focused on a particular perspective that, you know, most of the world will never really get to see.
Yeah, gosh, I'm like, okay, hold on. I have so many things that I want to say there. Yeah, I love that. And that's kind of like one of the reasons of starting this podcast was to really share with other OTs and people outside of the profession of what others are doing, what other OTs are doing, what other OT students are doing, what are people within our world, what are they doing? Because there's so much opportunity out there and there's so many cool things that are popping up daily. And I want to be able to share those stories with everybody and just kind of bring awareness of the opportunity. And I still feel like even though there's more and more developing all the time, there's still so much more that can be done within OT. And so it's really... It's cool to just have to see that opportunity and to see the potential that's there.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I mean, and to me, maybe one thing we'll get into here as we go along is I feel like some OTs can get caught up on the idea that it, you know, it has to be like an OT business, like really rigid. Mm-hmm. Like within OT, I mean, you can be, I've often had life coaching type people come up and, you know, they'll come up on ads or whatever, since I'm studying marketing a lot of the time. And so because I've clicked, you know, you're getting their ads or whatever, again, they're just like following you around the internet. And so I like to look at them and be like, what is their strategy here? But it makes me think like, wow, OTs, like they're like born life coaches. For example, they have, you know, this incredible understanding of the body, the science behind how everything works and when it doesn't work, you know, functionally, the environment. And I'm like, who's a better person to be, you know, a coach to a person who's really motivated by personal improvement? And I bring that up not to be like, oh, that's where OT should go. But I'm just saying that's a little bit different than a person who's like, oh, all I can do is I can start a practice. I'm in rehab, so it's going to be, you know, strictly rehab business, and you know, I've got to go through all that insurance mess. And I really think those are great businesses. I'm not downplaying those who choose to start that business, but I'm just saying, let's open our minds and see that, you know, your skills can be used in so many ways, and starting a traditional therapy clinic is one of them, but maybe being a coach is another one, maybe creating OT themed products is a third one. But I mean, people literally could think of hundreds of ways. And I would like to see OTs kind of branch out. And as I mentioned earlier, and kind of use multiple, I guess, spaces in their mind where they're like, okay, yeah, I'm taking care of my family. I've got my full-time job. But in another creative portion of their brain, they're thinking, oh, do I like coaching? Do I like products? Do I like being more inventive? What do I really like? I would be excited to see OTs kind of explore outside of what they're used to.
I completely second that. I think occupational therapists are so creative, and that's the word. You said creative, and I was like, yes, that's it. I feel like we have so much creativity, and being able to capitalize on that and turn it into something that maybe isn't out there yet, something developing, something new, or adding on to an existing entity that's already there. I think this just goes back. I feel like there's so much opportunity, and OTs have that skill set and that mindset in order to kind of come up with something groundbreaking and life-changing.
Yeah, no, I agree. They totally do. And I think where a lot of them get caught up is, like, for me, where I've got caught up in in lots of my ideas. I'll have great ideas, you know. I'll have lots of bad ones as well. But
they have their place. The bad ones have their place.
You need them. It's like exercise. I mean, it's about consistency. And one of my other mentors, his name's James Altucher, I've subscribed to like one of his paid newsletters, and he's always talking about like this idea of choosing yourself, you know, not in a way that's selfish per se, but like choose to invest in yourself, choose to invest in your knowledge, choose opportunities for yourself, choose, you know, rather than doing things the way they've always been done, try these other things, kind of a more of a theme statement than anything. But I see a lot of people, as I said, myself included, we'll have these ideas, you know, maybe we'll even make websites, we'll do all the things that really aren't critical. But the critical part is, if you want to start something, then get some customers. That should be the first thing. No website, no graphic design, none of that. Just get some customers. And there's a lot of ways you can go ahead and get the customers, but people retreat. So, you know, if those who are listening to this are thinking of starting something, like, doesn't matter if it doesn't work, if you're afraid of something, but just go out and try to get a customer or a trial customer or something. You can build all the other stuff later. Mm-hmm. And I say that because I spent so much time, a lot of money, and, you know, I wish I could go back, rewind, and be like, okay, whatever project it is, just go out and find people who have that problem, whether it's talking to them, giving them a survey, whatever it happens to be, just get in front of them, start talking to them. Hey, is this something that, you know, you're having challenges with or struggling with? If I was to do something about it, would you potentially pay if the solution was good? You know, it's really as simple as that, but we like to complicate it. And again, I'm saying that because I have a lot of emotion there from, why did it take me so long to do that in my own life? And I still struggle with it.
I think it just goes back to like limiting beliefs and imposter syndrome and all of these reasons that people, and I'm including myself in this too, why we think we can't do things. We're very much prone to thinking, oh, well, it's already been done, or do I have anything, like, I don't have anything special to add. Like, there's all these other people that are amazing and they're doing great things, but like, what can I add to the value pot? And I feel like sometimes you don't even know the value of what you can do until you've put yourself out there and you've done it. You can go around, and I love your idea of talking to people and like kind of doing a needs assessment of what you think should be there. But you might get like one or two people that are like, yeah, that's great. And then you release the product or you release whatever it is that your idea. And then all of a sudden people are like, oh, I knew I wanted this, but I didn't realize that that's what it was that I was missing until I actually saw it.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I've had that as a customer of a lot of the things I've done. I go into it with one idea, for example, some online business learning. Oh, I want to, you know, go and learn how to set up a really high ticket coaching program that people would pay a lot of money for. But at the end of the day, I end up getting an opportunity to work in a position that has connected me with really smart, really talented people in all new types of disciplines. So, you know, I like that. I like where that's going.
Mm-hmm. So I totally kind of cut you off, and I want to jump back now because we were talking a little bit about business, but I cut you off before you started talking about like how you got into OT. So somewhere you had an idea, you were thinking med school, and then you said optometry, correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what went through my mind. You know, should I do medical school? Every person at some point feels like maybe they should become a doctor, or most of us. And then we're like,
I was thinking a vet.
I don't want to give away, you know, again, I love doctors. I think they do an incredible job at what they do. And modern medicine is doing things for people that it's never done before. But all that aside, like, it wasn't for me. Like, I didn't want to have to spend half my life getting there. And then I felt like the next half would be kind of getting debt free. So I was like, oh, what else, you know, what else can I do? You know, kind of a helping profession type of way. And something that includes a little bit of variety and creativity. And as I went along, you know, I didn't really find it. And, you know, I think that's another important thing in life, whether you're OT or someone else, is, you know, people are waiting for this calling to come and slap them in the face. It's really not going to happen. You're going to have a lot of quote unquote callings, I think, in your life. Now, when I get a chance to chat with people who are like, I'm not quite sure where the road's headed for me in my future, my career, kind of my educational journey, kind of say, well, you know, start to think of things you like, hate, you don't want to do them at all. And then think of some things that you really don't mind doing, and think of things that the market or the public is really presenting as a demand. So something that's, you know, kind of supply and demand is on your side. So for me, you know, I was factoring all these things in. And while I was doing that, I told you I was decent at business. So I was working in business. So this is kind of going along with what I just said. I didn't see making phone calls as my calling, but I was taking care of my family. In one of the jobs, I had recently got married. And a few months after we got married, we found out we were going to have a baby. We were pregnant, you know, that was 9 months down the road, but it made me start thinking, wow, I'm going to be responsible for a human life, you know, and they totally depend on me financially and in every other way. And so that really instills a sense of responsibility in you. And it came to a point where that job, as I said, I wasn't super motivated in the cubicle. I wasn't performing badly, but my motivation was kind of going downhill. And I got to the point where I had been promoted at that job, but after about a year and a half, I was to the point where they're like, okay, let's have a chat. Like, I could either be demoted or just kind of move on. And I chose to move on. And what happens in life is, you know, we have something like this happen, and it's like, now I have a new chance to do something different. And like the silly person I am, I reverted right back to my stability mindset. And like within a week or two, I had gotten another job doing basically the same thing, different company. And that lasts all of like 3-4 months. And this time around, I was like, oh, I have a plan. Like, I had identified some marketable skills that paid pretty well. And there was a tech boot camp in my area. It was like 3 or 4 months. It's called user experience design. I still think it's really cool type of job for those like into tech or whatever. So I was getting ready to do this boot camp. They're like, yeah, it's going to start in a couple months. So that's one of the reasons I left that second job I had mentioned. So the first I was like, all right, demoted or move on. I moved on. Next one, it lasted 3 or 4 months. I was like, okay, I'm going to do this tech boot camp, moving on. And About a week or two before they started, they sent an email saying, oh, we canceled this program and it's going to still happen, but it's going to be like 3 or 4 months than we thought. And that was like kind of a slap in my face as well, because I was like, oh my goodness, I had enough to get me through that program essentially, because it was like 3 months. And now it was going to be like a 7-month thing, because I'd have to wait 3 months, then it would be another 4 months. So I was just thinking, what am I going to do? I just quit that job a week ago. Probably shouldn't have done that. And so, you know, you start feeling like, depressed. Like, I'm failing. I'm not really having a trajectory that's upward in my life right now. You know, you start to wonder about your roles as a father, a husband. Like, am I doing a good job? Am I, like, fulfilling my responsibilities? And a lot of times you're like, no, I'm messing up. I'm failing. And, you know, at that time, a few months went by and I actually got some outreach from some sales recruiters. And again, I kind of reverted back to that safety mode. Like, when you're in that situation and you're like, I can either do something a little bit uncertain and I don't know the outcome, or I can grab on to like what's sure. Most of us, and for the right reasons, I think, will grab on to the certainty. And that's what I did again. So again, it was like a repeating pattern.
It sounds like business wanted to push you out because you had other strengths, other places. Mm-hmm. But then it was like, no, I'm going to go back. Okay, try it again. No, I'm going to go back.
Yeah, no. And like I said, I didn't get the message, obviously. And it was really, I felt kind of defeated, because I had, you know, in those first few like kind of job opportunities after college, I kind of felt like I was going through the same cycle. You know, I would get good at something, I'd get promoted, then I would lose the motivation. I was like, this isn't really what I want to be doing with my life. And then that I don't know, third or fourth opportunity that I had come along to, I had mapped out a plan to do something different. I had identified a school, a skill, a way to do it. I had created time by leaving that job, and then it all kind of backfired on me when they said, hey, we're not doing this for a while. So I almost had to be like, that was my window of hope. Now that window of hope is gone. And that's why I took, you know, back to the safety net of, you know, a typical environment that I had been in business, which wasn't bad. It was a pretty good paying job, and I just really didn't like the work I was doing. And it was really depressing. I'd come home to my wife and sometimes I would be like, can I quit this job? And, you know, just look at the expressions and be like, okay, I got another month in me. And all through this while, I don't know how I did it, but I was doing lots of prereq classes for OT school because I had got my bachelor's degree and I still had some prereqs I needed to do. Thankfully, I had thought about medical school and like optometry and that. So a lot of the classes I had done were working in my favor for OT, but I still needed probably like a semester's worth of prereqs. And I was doing that while I was working. Some of the time I was working full time, and sometimes it took an hour to drive one way to get to the college I was going to. And it was just like, is this really worth it? Like, this life thing is hard.
Tell me about it.
Eventually, kind of the breath of fresh air. I mean, I was still working at that latest job and I didn't like it. And I got a letter of acceptance from an OT school. And I was just like, oh my goodness, this is the day I'm breaking free from my cubicle prison.
So I'm curious your take on, do you feel like, because I'm asking this like out of curiosity, because I hear it all the time. And I hear like a lot of people when they talk about things that don't go as planned, or that they try something and it doesn't work out and they consider it a fail. Do you feel like your stints in business, when you were trying to do the tech boot camp, would you consider those fails, or do you feel like those really kind of helped shape you into becoming the OT that you are?
Well, I think it has shaped, you know, yeah, it's shaping the OT that I am becoming as well as the person I'm becoming. Because through all those experiences, you know, many people, for example, on that first opportunity, the company I was with second out of college, I was with them for about 2.5 years, and I could have stayed with them longer. And when I said demoted, I mean, it was still a good role, a great company. My family would have been just fine. But for me, I was like, you know, I've seen what upward mobility looks like, and it's really not all that exciting. I can't really go that much farther than where I was, maybe a little bit, but you know, the quality of life, the amount of time you have in your schedule, it really wasn't much to work with. You know, getting to become a manager or something like that, it was like, I'll have more time at work, a little bit more money. It's not really worth it for me.
And a lot more stress.
Yeah, a lot more stress. So, I mean, throughout this whole process and, you know, identifying various career paths, mapping out in-demand skills, as a young 20-something, that was very valuable, because now I feel like, rather than having a mindset where, you know, dang it, you know, what if I lose my job? I don't have that mindset anymore. I'm very confident in myself. I'm very confident in being able to research the needs of human beings, of individuals, as well as, you know, the general population, or, you know, on a larger scale, what the world is after or asking for. And being able to position myself in a way that is valuable to them. So it wasn't for me, after a few jobs, it was almost like a joke for some of the members of my family, like, oh, Andy quit his job again. And my part at kind of being like, hey, I got this, at kind of getting back to them with those comments was, hey, I got a job 2 weeks after the fact. And that's pretty hard to do if, you know, you move from one opportunity to the next. It's really not that easy to kind of get that whole interviewing, securing a new opportunity in a short amount of time down. So I felt like it was more a mindset thing that's shaping me. To come back to the question, it's okay, you know, when crappy stuff happens or when things that are unexpected, not necessarily crappy, but different, not according to plans. I always think like there's 100 other things I can do. One thing didn't work, whoop-de-doo. There's 100 other things I can do. Now, what am I doing about it?
The key word that you just said is mindset. And I really think it's that mindset that you have to have, that if you get faced with something that is negative or just something you don't want or something that didn't go your way, and you have the mindset of, oh, poor me, like this is awful, what am I going to do now? That's not the mindset that you can have. And from, you know, from just the way that you're talking, it sounds like you have the mindset of, all right, now what? It's not poor me. It's like, where am I going to go? Where can I go from here? And it almost has that positive spin on it rather than that negative spin. And it's not closing a door. It's opening 5 more.
Yeah, exactly. And even to expound on that a little, you know, I already mentioned I had received an acceptance to OT school. But that was just, I mean, that was my primary plan at the time is I want to get into OT school while I was working those jobs to take care of my family and just be responsible as a father. But besides the OT school, I was like, well, what if OT school doesn't work out for me this year? You know, because I was applying a little bit later than what I should have, honestly. Fortunately, I got in, but I did end up paying for another type of user experience design, that same skill set that I was wanting to learn. I found another program that wasn't the ones who delayed their program. And that was kind of in my back pocket. I was like, if I don't get in, I'll go ahead and I'll put my effort into this skill for the next 6 to 12 months. So it wasn't like, oh, hopefully I get in. And if I don't, I'll, you know, find a $10 to $15 an hour job to do. Because that wasn't an option for me. I was, you know, I had to take care of rent, food, diapers, all that fun stuff.
You had people depending on you.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, you don't need all of these life situations to drive you to do that, but it definitely is how it works with a lot of people. But I think for those who are kind of worrying about the future, like, it's almost fruitless to worry so much and so hard about one or two particular things. Just be focused on them and be very much working toward those things. But like you said, the important word is mindset. Like there are 100 ways, thousands of ways to be happy in life and content and to give a contribution. And if one of them doesn't work out, even if it's temporarily, like don't turn that into a stumbling block where you're not progressing it in any other area of your life.
Yeah, I'm such a worrier, and like growing up, and I'm so aware of it, and I've really been trying to kind of counteract that as I'm getting older, because I know that I'll sit and I'll stew on things forever. And a couple years ago, I came across the quote, and it's that worrying is like a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but it doesn't get you anywhere. And when I heard that, I was like, yes, like that is totally true. And so anytime I catch myself getting stuck and just like spinning my wheels on something and stressing about something, I'm really trying to reframe it as, well, what's the worst that could happen? If I can understand what's the worst that could happen in this situation and I'm okay with that, why am I worrying about everything else? Because most of the time when you worry about something, it doesn't end up how you're worrying anyway. And so that's something, and I am not perfect at it, but that's something that I'm really trying to instill in myself of like, okay, I can think about it, but I thought about it, I've spent my time, and now I'm going to move on. I'm going to move on to something else that needs my time and attention right now.
Yeah, no, it's so true. Like, you know, as human beings, we're all that way, I think, to an extent. And even if we have the mindset to jump out of that, like there's still at least for me, they're still part of it. I retreat to that type of way of life so many times, and it's frustrating to me because I recognize it in my mind, yet I feel so powerless to avoid kind of retreating again and again and again.
Right. Yes, I know that feeling. But I want to jump to something. So I came across a little video on your website, and it definitely piqued my interest. And the title was "Design Your Life for Freedom." You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I didn't realize anyone had seen that.
Oh yeah, I'm a super sleuth. I did my research. I found it, and when I came across that, and I was like, this is awesome. I really liked it. And I feel like it's really tying into a lot of what we've been talking about already today. And I'd love for you to just kind of elaborate a little bit more on like what designing your life for freedom, like what that means for you and any of the ways that you've kind of done it already.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I'm excited that I've got at least one video of you.
You're welcome.
But, you know, a lot of that, like I said, I do a lot of my projects for me. If some of them one day turn into a little income, that's great. But I feel like my spirit wants to create and search and do these types of things. So if nothing else, it's an exercise for me to do that. But with that whole kind of, you know, designing your life for freedom, there's a lot of, I think people can get caught up in that statement can be interpreted in a lot of ways and in a lot of very wrong ways. But I think it's very personal. Like for me, when I say freedom, it's really just about, do I have some time to develop relationships with my wife, with my children? And looking at all of my experiences, I've shared a little bit about some of the work experiences I've had. And I've made them sound like, oh my goodness, they're cubicle jobs and they're horrible. They were good jobs. They were good companies. Some of these companies were rated, you know, like the top 50 companies, small businesses to work for. So great companies. But again, it's every human being is so different. And when I say design your life for freedom, that has to be an individual thing for me. It's about time. And to a certain extent, it is about money, or I need to cover my cost of living and how you're paid. The guy that I mentioned earlier, Richie Norton, he often says, change the way you're paid, change your life. So it kind of goes back to the philosophy of, I think kind of the group think, like I mentioned a lot of occupational therapists, when they want to start a business, they're just thinking, what is my role? What do I do? What do I get paid for? What does the world pay me for right now? But, you know, really excluding all the creative outlets that they could get paid for. So, you know, if you think about that statement, change the way you're paid, change your life. Well, how is that so? And in my life, one quick story that illustrates that is after I had quit the job where I was going to do that tech boot camp. If that wasn't enough stress on my wonderful wife, I wonder, you know, she was probably thinking, I married a crazy man. Here he is. He leaves his job. No, now we don't have income. And he's spending $10,000 that we don't have.
And she was working at this point, or she's not?
I don't believe she was at this point because we had our baby now. And again, part of my, and this was a decision both of us made, but we decided she wanted to stay home and actually raise our child, you know, rather than doing something like daycare or whatever the other options are. So, yeah, that was like, wow, what's he doing? He's messing up. But in that program, you know, if I fast forward from that time all the way until the most recent opportunity I had before getting accepted into OT school, where I was just like so stoked to be like, yes, I can leave this job and I can leave it with confidence, knowing that there's a real avenue now that's opened up for me with OT school. At that time, I still had like 4 months before OT school started. So it was like, yes, I got in, but it's only March and it doesn't start till like July. Well, you know, still got to pay the rent, pay for food, all that in the meantime. And because of that program that I had enrolled in, and I was like, man, I didn't make anything of myself in the program. It was an 8-week program, and I still have access to some content, but the actual support part of it was 8 weeks, and I really, there was no tangible outcomes that I created during that time to be like, oh, that was a success for me. So again, kind of going back to like being adaptable in your life and looking at things with a different mindset, I could have been like, oh my gosh, I've quit so many jobs. I'm such a failure. I just keep on making bad decisions for my family, one after the other. But rather than kind of reverting to that mindset completely, I used it to my benefit. I was like lurking around online. Shouldn't say lurking, just like networking, getting in social media groups, Facebook groups, meeting some great people. And that evolved into a work opportunity that turned into another opportunity. I won't go through all of them, but it ended up being a remote kind of sales position, part-time. And I got, I believe it was like 20% commission on a $10,000 product. So all the calls were booked for me. I didn't have to do any cold calling. So they're like, hey, someone wants to talk to you. Here's the time, just show up, talk to them, you know, use your skills to make sure they're the right fit. You know, it was all very, I'm a big fan of like when selling a product, you know, they have to be the right fit. You have to be the right fit, like selling in integrity, essentially making sure you do the best you can. And obviously there's a lot of variables in the middle, but that experience, I don't know the exact numbers, but I probably made like at least 20,000 working part-time. And I thought, like, I did that in like less than 6 months. There was 1 week where I had a really great week, and I think it was close to like a $10,000 week. And I had worked maybe like, I don't know, 20 hours that week. And it just took me aback, and I was like, wow. Here I was my first year out of college struggling, working like 45 hours a week just to make $15 an hour. And then in, you know, 1 or 2 weeks, I did like 1 to 2/3 of what I could do in a year in a traditional job. So kind of going back to design your life for freedom, it's don't be like, you know, oh, I'm going to start an online business. Everything's going to be working out just great. But go back to kind of that two-track mind where, hey, what's my marketable skill that I'm focusing on that is bringing home the income that, you know, and it's a skill that I don't mind doing. I actually enjoy. And in addition to that, you know, you're doing the smart thing and you're testing different projects on the side, but you have the backing of your solid opportunity, I'll call it. So that was kind of the start, I guess, not the start, but like a big turning point for my mind where I was like, wow, this internet thing really is, you know, possible. It's really hard to be successful online, but, it's possible. And like thinking about past generations, talking with my dad and other people that have worked their whole lives in different roles. Like there was no LinkedIn, there was no Facebook, there was none of this. Like networking your way to a really cool opportunity for yourself and your family. It was mostly like, hey, what's available locally in the place I want to live? Like, how do I do this without anyone besides those who I can connect with in my neighborhood, essentially? And if you had to do that, you'd struggle probably to be as successful as your parents. At least that's how I feel about it. So I'm super grateful for, I mean, there's a lot of bad that comes with tech, but I'm grateful for the things that are afforded to us if we want to try them now, people that we want to serve. And that program that I did, and then the next program that I helped with selling, I was selling Facebook advertising agency training. So like, hey, you want to be a Facebook advertising agency, helping other businesses grow their businesses? What I was selling was the program to help them do that. So it was really cool. It was kind of businessy and in entrepreneurship. And I was like, hey, I'll learn some marketing skills out of it. That turned out to help me create income, help me see really, you know, kind of develop that concept of what is freedom in my own life. And kind of going back to that, like, again, for me, it's the family element. if I can have more than 2 hours in a day, besides Saturdays and Sundays, to share with my family, and at the same time be creating a really cool contribution to someone's life, you know, that's kind of where I'm trying to develop a sweet spot.
That's so great. I think that's just amazing. And yeah, I love that you said that, like, freedom can be defined differently for every person. Because, like, I'm hearing what you're saying, and I'm like, yeah, that's great. But maybe not everyone's going to think our way. Like, some people might want to go travel, or some people might want to invest their time and energy in other operations. But I think the big thing is really just that opportunity and having that ability to do that on your own time and be able to do the things that you want to do with your life and not just be strapped to a cubicle or like strapped to your job where it's like, I can't leave my job because then I can't afford my life outside of that. And I keep going back to that title. I love that. I just think it's amazing. I think it's so good. And the other thing that I wanted to talk about, and you were kind of touching on this when you were talking, was investing in yourself. I wanted to highlight that because I feel like a lot of times, especially OTs, we feel like we shouldn't spend money on ourselves because we need to be doing something else with it. We shouldn't do this continuing education, or we shouldn't go to this conference, or we shouldn't do X, Y, and Z that costs money, because there's always another reason for it. Maybe like you think you can't afford it, or you want to be spending it somewhere else. And I totally agree with you that, like, even if you feel like I'm going back to you spending that $10,000 when you're unemployed and your wife isn't working and now you have a kid, and it's like, yeah, you probably shouldn't have spent that $10,000. But what that afforded you was all of these other things after that. And I think so many people just get hung up on, well, I shouldn't do it. And it's like, you're spending money, but you are investing in yourself to then potentially be able to capitalize on those skills at a later date.
Yeah, exactly. And while you were saying that, I was thinking about what you said earlier with how you kind of map out, like, what's the worst thing that could happen? I kind of did that with, like, when I spent the money, you know, I wasn't just like willy-nilly, like, hopefully it goes well and
fingers whatever. Crossed.
I don't even know what the worst case scenario is. But with kind of the loan, kind of my worst case scenario is I would be paying off, like, I don't know, less than $200 a month for like 3 or 4 years. And I was like, that's kind of a pain to see that every month, like a few hundred, $200 or $300 extra dollars going out. But I was like, it's not that crazy to me to think, like, you know, what's the best thing that can happen versus what's the worst thing that can happen. And even just like minimizing what's the best that can happen down to like, what if one or two good things happen? Not even the best thing, but like, what if just a couple of good things happen? And that was kind of my mindset there. Was, I thought that kind of thinking outweighed, oh, like $200 or $300 a month for a few years is just too much for me to comprehend. It wasn't. And so I got through it and I was like, I'm just banking on a few good things happening here. I don't think I'm going to be this all-star success of this person's program, but I think a few good things will happen, and I don't know how, and maybe they won't, but it you know, the things that were good that happened, those few good things, I had no idea what those things would be. So when you say like, I don't know if I want to spend money on the this or that type of personal improvement, you have no idea. I mean, you're thinking about it with a logical brain, and that's not always the right way to think about it. You need to include that as an element of your analysis with things. But beyond the logical brain, you have to think, you know, what are some unknowns? What are a few good things that may happen? Is it possible that some good things will happen that I won't even think about until they happen? And I think if people start thinking that way, then, you know, and still be smart about it. You know, you can't ultimately, that $200 or $300 wouldn't have put my family in a situation that we couldn't recover from. We actually ended up living with my wife's family for a few months prior to OT school to save money on rent and things. And it gave us more time to spend time with them, which was great. But like I said, I was like, okay, I don't really have a ton of money for rent for the next 4 months. So yeah, we'll live here for another couple months. Then we'll spend a month or two with family. And that wasn't something I had considered much up until, you know, that crossroads came up. So, you know, if anyone's out there thinking, well, should I do this or that? Like, be smart about it. Like, yeah, go through what you said. Like, what's the worst that can happen? What are a few good things that can happen? Look at both of them. Like, you know, is one weighing outweighing the other? Just realizing, like, you know, your worst case is often overemphasized in your mind for the broad majority of the population.
So I love that you just shared that you ended up moving in with family, because my husband and I, we actually did the same thing. And it's the parallels between the stories are actually pretty, pretty funny. So he ended up, he got laid off from his job and then wanted to go do a coding boot camp. And it was like a 12-week program, like super intensive, 6 days a week, 10 to 12 hours a day. And at that point, we were having this like awful, awful living situation with like termites, and like they kept raising the rent, and we wanted to get out. And so we were like looking for an excuse to get out, but we were comfortable and we liked where we were. And so it's like, okay, we liked the location of where we were. And when the whole thing happened with his job and then this opportunity for the coding boot camp, I had this idea. I'm like, okay, we want to get out of our apartment anyway. What if we did go spend some time with family and you can go focus on your thing? I was working a ton at that point. I mean, I was seeing 9 to 10 kids a day and driving all around town. So I was leaving at 7 in the morning and not getting home until 8 o'clock at night. And so we did. We ended up going and we moved in with my parents for about five-ish months, something like that. And it was funny because everybody always thought, like, are you guys okay? Are you guys okay financially? Like, what's going on? And we're like, yeah, everything's fine. We are just utilizing this opportunity to cut down our expenses, spend some time with family. That gave me somebody to hang out with because I knew my husband was going to be gone the entire time. And so as you're talking about that, I'm like, yeah, I know that feeling. I went exactly through the same thing.
It's kind of nice to be like, well, I'm not alone in kind of the similarity of that experience. Not that I wish that on anyone. I definitely wish people more time with family. Like that, to me, I love my in-laws. I love my own family. Like I've been blessed with great family relationships. So that's never something I'm like just doing to, I don't want people to be like, oh yeah, just like save money with family. But if I had more time with them, I would take it. And that was just given, like you said, given a couple great opportunities right at the same time.
Yes. And it worked. I think it worked out for everybody. I think it was good. And it was, I think it was a luxury that both of us had that opportunity that we could move in with family to assist in that situation. So I thought that was pretty funny. But the other thing that just kind of popped in my head as you were talking, and this is going back to like the mindset and picturing the worst and worrying and kind of all of that we were just talking about. And it's almost like you have to shift in your brain, worrying about stuff that probably won't happen, but you never really stop to think about what could happen or what will happen. I think a lot of times we get stuck in this, the worst possible thing that could happen. And we never really stop to think like, what opportunities might what I'm doing afford me later?
Yeah, no, exactly. When you're saying that, I'm just thinking of that. Have you seen that comic that the guy's like has the pickaxe and he's going through the tunnels and he gives up just like prior to reaching where he made a discovery of sorts? You know what I'm talking about?
No, please go on. Well, you know, like
people who are, I think it's just, it views as if it's like a little comic strip. But, you know, someone's, you know, they're mining for whatever gold or the medals or whatever. And there's a few representations out there that basically the figure is so close, like a few more picks of the axe. And he's gone a long way. I mean, not discounting the journey, because he's done lots of tunnels. But he's so close in it. And on one of the representations, I mean, they stopped just prior to what you were saying, you know, just prior to that goal, like the failure thinking and, you know, stopping versus like just pushing on a little bit more. And I've gone back to this type of metaphor so many times. One thing I didn't tell you about with all the ruckus that was going on when I was trying to figure out like how to make money, have like a decent career path while I was applying to OT school to see if I was going to get in, was like the first interview I did, both of my plane rides to my interview got canceled.
Oh no.
So I got one the day before, so I get there a little early, got canceled like the same day, like that they were supposed to fly. And I was like, oh crap, what do I do? And they're like, oh, we can get you on tomorrow morning. I'm like, that barely gives me enough time to make it, but I think that'll work. And like, I wake up that next morning, look at my phone, and that flight has been canceled too. And I was like, oh no, like, I'm not going to make it into OT school. I'm not even going to make it to the interview.
Oh.
I was in Utah at the time. I had to go to Arizona, and I kind of contact them. I'm like, hey, I'm rushing. I actually got on my clothes, drove up to Salt Lake City because I was in about 45 minutes from Salt Lake City at the time where we were living. I got on a plane. I think it costed me like $800, $900 for a flight that should have been like between $200 and $300, because it was last second.
Yeah.
But I was like, what the heck, you know? I got to try and get into OT school, but maybe this is like a whole universe thing telling me no, OT is not for you. But you know, I flew there, I was a little bit late, but they were nice. And that's funny to me because that's the school I actually ended up attending. I got in a different school, but that's that school that I had that happen at was one of the schools. And on another one of my interviews out in Oregon, it was like the one time in who knows how many years or months, but they had like an ice storm that weekend that I went, and I was like struggling to get to an Airbnb that I had booked for the night before. And I'm like, I'm gonna like get shot or stabbed out here on a train by myself at like 12 o'clock at night in an ice storm. It's like, this is so crazy. But I think about kind of that visual of someone who's just like picking away through a lot of things that are not really that marvelous when you're doing them every day, like doing these prereqs, like going to school after work, like taking care of family stuff. It's like, oh man, this isn't really all that, doesn't feel attractive almost. But in the deepest sense of the word, it is very attractive from kind of a noble standpoint. But to me, I was just like, am I ever going to make it to that point? Like before I give up? And, you know, again, like I finally got the word, but I was like, holy cow, like looking back on all that, there were so many opportunities for me to be like, no, like the world has slapped me around so hard that I'm just not going to go that route anymore.
I think that just like, especially because you were going to an interview, I feel like that just shows how you handle tough situations, because you could have gotten like all pissed off and you could have just canceled the whole thing and completely overreacted and be like, I just can't, it's too much. But I'm sure the school saw like, wow, okay, you have no control over the planes getting canceled or twice, and you're persevering, you're figuring out other ways. And I liken that to almost the journey of somebody that you might be seeing as a client, as they have something happen to them, and now they have to push through to get to be where they want to be when they're done. And I think it's like, yeah, it just shows how you handle like adversity and how you handle difficult things that don't go your way. And you have to come up with other ways to get to that end goal that might not have been the first thing that you thought of or the way you thought you'd get there.
Thank you. I mean, incrementally, I'm hopefully improving in my life in ways incrementally. I'm like, I like that phrase, like improve 1% here, you know, every day if you can, but every week if need be. So, I mean, I hope they weighed in on that. I told them, I was like, doing all I can to get here. Like, so, but it, you know, it worked out. It worked out in the end for me to get into school. And, but even kind of going along with that, like another interesting idea and thought is like in life, like you mentioned kind of a client's journey too. Like you can meet a really cool milestone. Like I got into OT school, which was a huge deal for me personally. And I was like, oh, I did it, you know, like celebration mode for a little bit. But then before you know it, you're thrown into a new environment, OT school itself. And I was like, I haven't been in college for like over 3.5 years. I was a great student, but I have a baby now. I have a wife. Like I have a job to like hang out with them a little bit. It's not, you know, it's not all like perfectly aligned to how it's going to work. And I struggled my first semester of OT school, like at least, you know, what I thought compared with other people in my class. I'm like, man, this is good. Like, I like these people. They're helping me step up to what I need to do. But at the same time, I was just like, I'm just keeping my head above the water. And I was still working a little bit at that kind of remote role at the time. And I eventually quit that kind of prior to starting my second semester because I was like, was all of that effort that came prior to this worth it? Like, I'm not sure. Like, am I even supposed to be in OT school going through anatomy and like pathophysiology and all these classes that I'm not like a super sciencey person in nature? I appreciate the sciences very much and I love learning. But my brain isn't wired quite like some other, I'll call them some more science minded minds may be. So it was a little hard for me. And I was just like, wow. And kind of relating back to your, you know, kind of like a client journey, like one success seems to happen and pass so quickly. And then you're engulfed in a whole nother storm of sorts.
Right. Yeah. I think it's so funny because I can totally relate when you're saying that you struggled. You just said the first semester. I would have to say I struggled throughout all of OT school. And it was just me. Like, I didn't have a family. You know, I didn't have a husband or kids or anybody that I had to support. I really just had to look after myself, and I struggled to get through. So I can only imagine the added layer of stress and commitments that you would have going through it right now.
Yeah, you know, believe me when I say I was like, I was not going to be the 4.0 student, not even like, you know, I was like, if I get B's, that's great. Like, that's what I was kind of shooting
B's
for.
B's get degrees.
Yeah, especially, and I was like, this is a master's degree. Like, I don't know if I'm kind of furthering the traditional education after this. Maybe, but like, I'm going to give some time to family. And I mean, I didn't give a ton of time to family. I talk about it like I did, but not really. Like what you said, like my wife was probably like, oh, see you in a little while, like a year, year and a half, 2 years. And some weeks it was like that, you know how that was, studying for exams all week or 2 weeks, or, you know, kind of sprints toward those. And I make it sound like it got easier, and it did get a little bit easier. I just feel like I had built up kind of a routine again and a little bit more resilience, and kind of just felt like I was in the saddle a little bit more. That being said, I think every, like you mentioned, every semester was still a new challenge. Like, oh, this semester I gotta learn neuroscience, and the next time I actually gotta start learning rehab stuff. So that's why I brought it up. It's just like in life, there's not, I mean, take time to celebrate that success. Like, you need to do that with whatever it is that, you know, you've accomplished. But, you know, life's not going to be easy for you. Just accomplish one thing. Even if the major goal, it's going to keep coming. And so it's best to develop that sense of resilience and, you know, creative thinking and like, hey, what are the other 10 to 20 opportunities I can do, like, when things don't go my perfect way?
Yeah. So this is a perfect segue into my next question, because You're talking about these other opportunities and these other things that people can be up to. And I know that you are up to something really, really cool, something extremely needed within the world of occupational therapy. And I came across, this was a year ago, a couple years ago, I can't remember specifically when it was, but I came across Casey Coleman, and he was on another podcast that I was listening to, and he was talking about what one of the things that he had co-founded, I believe, and it was called the Pre-PT Grind, and basically it was talking about helping students get into physical therapy school and how to stand out and how to get through the applications and GREs and everything that you would need kind of to package yourself to be a desired student. And I remember sitting there in my car and I was like, we need this in OT. We need this in OT. And then I came across what you are up to. And so I would love for you to share with our audience a little bit about what this is looking like on your end.
Yeah, absolutely. I love what Casey's, yeah, I've looked at kind of what they have going on, and I don't know if we're going to have exactly kind of similar ways of getting to the same types of results for the students, but at the end of the day, it's all about an outcome, like helping students do more than what they could do on their own. We think as students, we are very confident, and like I said, I mean, if that's what you feel you are, like, great, but there's always some room for new ideas and new strategies that will do a little bit more for you than going at it alone. And the reason I told all the stories I did kind of prior to this, I guess this segue, is I wanted people to feel their own sense of emotional energy. You know, all those jobs and struggles and wins and small successes, all those little things I mentioned, like, to me, that's a huge sense of emotional energy. And I think that background is important, because you see, prior to coming to something like grad school for OT school, there's a ton of stuff that has, like, interwoven in your life to even get you to that point. And it's like, when you think in your mind, like, what happens in my life if I don't make it in? Am I stuck in a position that I really I don't care for, or that I'm really not fulfilled by, or I'm not making enough money to get out of living with my parents? Or nothing wrong with parents, but, you know, you shouldn't be living with them when you can be self-reliant and kind of like adulting on your own. At least that's my view.
Unless it's a short term and you're using it for another reason.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's great. But, like, eventually, I'm like a big fan of self-reliance.
Right.
But, like, it's some serious mind work that you've got to do to kind of think through, like, what happens if I don't, if my plan doesn't work out? Like, what happens if I don't make it into OT school? And I've been exploring this, and there's a lot of things. Like, you get hit with self-confidence, like social relationships, for example. You know, you're out with friends, maybe you're at a family function, maybe it's the holidays. What are you doing with your life? You know, you're young, you're supposed to be able to tell everyone what you're doing with your career and how you're going to do everything in life. And if you haven't gotten accepted into OT school, what does that conversation look like? It's embarrassing. It's, well, kind of depressing. Like, I didn't, you know, I was going for OT school. I don't really know what the next 12 months is going to look like for me. I'm going to try to apply again. So I started thinking through kind of like, what are some real things that might be happening, like, with people's lives? What are they experiencing? Like, what's on the line if this doesn't work out for them? You know, for those who've already decided, like, OT is a route I want to pursue, that's kind of the qualifier there. Like, then what's on the line for these people beyond, like, that social, even in dating, you know, like, people, younger emerging adults, you know, they're wanting to develop relationships, wanting to find love, I think, a lot of people, and get married. And, you know, when, like, for a guy, I can say from a guy's perspective, you feel a tremendous amount of pressure if you're not doing something that will allow you to take care of a family. if the girls aren't thinking like, hey, how are you going to be able to take care of me? The guys definitely are. And that's like, that's a big deal. Like, if I don't get into OT school, what am I going to tell them? I'm working at a restaurant as a waiter and I'm hoping to get in next time. That's fine. I'm not downplaying that situation because many people are in that situation, but I'm just saying like, that's the amount of emotional energy that's going on inside, I think, some of these students. And I try to empathize with that because I've felt different types of emotional energy. It's like, what's your own story? Like, there's all this feeling and so much worked into it. Outside of that, I look at it financially, like what's riding on the line if you don't get accepted. Well, the opportunity cost, if you're not working as an OT a year faster than you could have been, like, and instead you're working a $10 to a $15 an hour job, which is the case for some of the people I've talked to that never got in on their first try. You know, that's tens of thousands of dollars that they miss out on, essentially. And more than the money, again, it's like the sense of self-confidence, the identity. Like, some people give up at that point and pursue things that maybe, you know, aren't really ever going to fulfill them in ways they feel like, you know, the occupational therapy route could. So I don't know if that's kind of, that thought process is making sense, but
oh, yeah.
I wanted to kind of start there.
Yeah, I think that's actually, I'm glad that you brought that up because I don't really think it's something talked about all that much. I think OTs are so, like, they're such go-getters. They get a plan and they go attack it and they want to do well and they want to succeed. And I've talked to quite a number of people that applied to OT school and didn't get in on their first try. They didn't get in on their second try. And it can have such a negative impact on so many aspects of that person's life. And so I'm really glad that you brought that mindset. Again, like, we keep saying the word mindset throughout this whole recording, but that is really, really important to understand the social, the emotional part of it, the financial part of it, the opportunity cost, everything that is kind of boiled in that same pot of banking on getting into OT school. So I thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, no problem. And the reason I start there is when we have these things hit us in life, we tend to kind of start on a downward spiral. You know, I didn't get in, therefore I'm not good enough, therefore I'm just going to go for the low-hanging fruit with jobs and I'm going to stay at home or stay in a situation that really doesn't improve my major goals in life, like being self-reliant. And maybe that goal is having a home, having a family, having the financial capacity to take care of that family, having some time to spend with them. Again, kind of going back to my story again, those are my goals, different goals for different people. So interpret that for your own life. But I start with kind of like what's on the line for them, because, you know, what I really have a vision for with, I call the program I'm developing pre-OT success. I've got a website. It's not all the way done, but essentially, you know, coming from a place where we understand these students and what really may have occurred in their life. So we don't know anyone's situation that clearly, you know, like my situation that I told you is probably a little bit more defined than any other students that we'll get to hear from. But at least we can know there's a whole lot of things that have happened in life, good, bad, struggles, wins, losses, and now they're here at this point. And some of them, like you've said, they've applied. I think I heard someone tell me that the first time they applied to 10 schools and didn't get into a single one. And I was like, wow, I only applied to like 4 or 5 schools. And I got interviews at 4 of them and I got into 2 of them. So I was like, I felt pretty good about, you know, the results I was able to achieve for myself. And kind of going back to my business experience, I've always been thinking like, what business can I do on the side, whether it's OT or not? And I always wanted to do something where I was like, I know this, I'm an expert at this. And I was like, what have I done? What results have I achieved in my own life or for someone that is like real, that's tangible? I don't want to be like another person out there that's doing the same thing. Like, oh, start an online business, start at like an online this or that. That is like, there's no differentiation at all. So I was like, I thought about kind of the students and my own experience. And I was like, I wonder if I wonder if this would be a good idea. You know, I was successful enough to get into OT school, even though I had applied later than what I should have. And I had the minimum observation hours. I think like it said, get 50 hours and I had like 52. And I have a Facebook group. It's a free group. If anyone wants to join it, it's just like for pre-OT students. No, I don't allow like practitioners in there, just to keep it focused for those pre-OT students, but it's pre-OT success on Facebook as well. So that group, I keep it focused for a reason, just so that the students feel like they have, you know, the people in there are in a similar place. And like I was saying, I only had 52 hours or so of observation experience. So one of the people in the Facebook group, I think they had one of the questions that has come up over the last, I don't know, it's been up for like 6 or 7 months, the group. But one of the questions that I thought was interesting that came up was like someone who was like, oh, I have like X amount of hundreds of observation hours of experience. And it was almost like they were thinking they needed more. And I was like, no, you're thinking about this wrong. At least that was my analysis. I was like, I got like 52 hours and I'm not trying to do the bare minimum, but I was busy. That was my life. And that's what I was able to do, for better or worse. And I just wanted to communicate to them, like, it's not about, you know, you can have 500 hours for all I care and you might not get accepted, but how are you representing yourself in your written materials, in your interview? Like, how are you setting yourself apart? How are you different? Are you going to be repeating the same story 200 other applicants are going to basically repeat with a little bit of variation? And so kind of this idea for, you know, a little, I guess you can call it consulting with pre-OT students, is to help them realize some of these points where it's like, okay, you may have applied to 10 schools last time. Let's evaluate, like, what was your strategy going in there? What was your story? Like, what made you different? For me, I was kind of like the business grad turned OT that I felt like I could do a good job advocating for OT as a profession in the future. I didn't want to work for AOTA necessarily, but advocating for your profession is something we can all do. And I think that's very much needed in occupational therapy. We feel some sort of identity crisis, I think, when people ask us, what is occupational therapy? And we have good definitions, but at the same time, most of the people, even the best definitions, aren't understood that well. So kind of my play on some of my interviews, and it was all in integrity because, you know, I'm here, I am talking to you now about this project, which I think is in very real sense advocating for OT.
Yes, but I agree.
That to me was like, I was like, how many other people are going to say this? And it wasn't just to say it, but I had a real plan to do this. And like, I think they liked it. Like, some of the schools appreciated that. And I think it helped me be remembered, a little bit memorable. It wasn't just, I'm a hard worker. I've done so many things. I have the GPA. I have the observation hours. I have all the requirements. Well, that's great. But why are you different? What? Tell me about why you're connected to the OT. Tell me about that journey, your OT journey. Here's how I'm going to make a specific impact in terms of how I'm differentiating myself amongst other students who are applying. Because a lot of people get caught up in generalities. They're preparing for specific questions. There's nothing wrong with that. I tell people all the time, I'm like, you better know how to answer what is occupational therapy. I answered that a little bit quirky at one school, and that's the reason they told me I didn't get into that school. And I was like, okay, I thought it was a decent definition, but like, if you felt like I didn't understand the definition well enough, like, hey, that's my fault. So like, I get like memorizing questions and hoping to get that, but there's so much that goes into even making a strategy to get into OT school. You can do it on your own for sure. Put in the work and do it right, apply early, all these things. But what I see is things students don't even consider. I mean, one interesting thing I did when I was at one of my when I was preparing for one of my interviews, I tried to find some people who were already at the school I wanted to apply to, found a Facebook photo of all things that like 20 or 30 people were tagged in it. And I started messaging these people, hey, just trying to get some advice. I'm applying to OT school. Any advice would be appreciated. Thanks. And it was incredible. Like, some of the advice I got really helped me, and I think it made a big difference in how I approached applying, because every school is a little different. You know, it's not kind of a templated process. So, I mean, these are all things. I mean, I could mention probably 10 or 20 other elements of, like, hey, here's what I did for my pre-OT journey and how that worked out for me. But at the end of the day, like, you need to have a strategy to get into OT school. It's not just answer the questions, seem like you know what you're talking about in the interview, and get in. For some people, you're lucky and you get in. But to me, that's gambling your future on something that you don't necessarily need to gamble on.
The other thing that it just kind of like popped into my head as you were talking is that occupational therapy is a small world. And now that I've been out in the field for 10 years, oh gosh, that's crazy to say. It's so fascinating to realize, like, I'm starting to get reports from people that were classmates of mine or referrals from somebody that I had met at a conference, and we're all connected. And what you have built with this pre-OT success group is almost building that community even before OT school starts, which has even like more immense benefits. Like, yes, you're helping them get into school. Yes, you're helping them realize their worth, realize their value and their potential, and helping them stand out and all of this really good stuff that you're doing. But then they are also connecting and getting to know each other. And now, like, the people in this group already have this community going into OT school, which maybe some of them might be classmates together, but a lot of them are probably going to end up at different schools all across the country. And I just, like, I already see the value in what you're doing at this level. And it's like, it's amazing. I'm so inspired by it. It's absolutely cool. And I also think that you as a student yourself developing and starting something like this proves that even as a student, you can make changes within the profession. And I hear it time and time again from students that are like, well, I'm just a student. I can't do anything, or I have nothing to contribute, right? Like, we talked about this early on in the conversation. And I'm like, no, you're a student, but you have a voice and you have your experience, you have your background, you have this lens that you can contribute in whatever way that you want to. And so I'm inspired by what you're doing, but I'm also inspired that you are doing it.
Well, thank you. It means a lot. Appreciate that.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
yeah.
I got a couple questions. We're going to do kind of like a little rapid fire question here, because I know we got to start wrapping it up. If you had one piece of advice for an aspiring OT, I know, I'm sure you have like a million ideas, but what do you think, like, the one biggest piece of advice that you would tell somebody that wants to get into OT school?
So I think one of the most valuable things for me, again, was I took the approach to think about what, instead of my weaknesses, which we all like to microanalyze, let's think about your strengths. Let's think about your unique identity, and let's think about your story, your OT journey. And I package that all up into what makes you unique. And people all the time tell me, I don't know. I'm not unique. That's not a good answer. You are unique. You have a story. You just need a little bit of maybe priming to get it uncovered. But, you know, think about it. Like, there's going to be lots of people applying, hundreds of them. You know, think about what they're going to say. What are all the other people going to say to typical responses to questions? And then think about, like, what are some core key stories I can tell about myself that will illustrate kind of my own OT journey in a way that allows me to be memorable and unique and shows them I'm serious about making an impact, not only in the profession for my colleagues, but for the clients, you know, so that whole world. And I think that when you do that, it's like, okay, they want to go to OT school, but they want to improve the world of life for clients, make it better, as well as you know, make the OT community better as well. I think that's powerful. So that's what I would say. What makes you unique? Think about it and explore and analyze the heck out of it.
Fantastic. That's just such a great answer. What would you say is your favorite resource outside of your Facebook group and your website? We're going to leave that separate, but either something that you used applying or in school, or something that you've come across that you think is a really valuable resource.
Focus time, self-reflection, and feedback. When I say feedback, like I mentioned, some of the best things that I received about applying to OT school came from fellow students or students that had been accepted the last year or any of those, I mean, those things. It's not rocket science. It's just, hey, do a bit of work, uncover some research enough to help you find some people to talk to who've been exactly where you want to be, being OT school, and ask them, hey, what, you're successful getting in, you know, what's some advice you have for me?
I love it. That's fantastic. Okay. We're gonna go off on something different here. If you were to write a book on something outside of anything we've talked about today, like something that we might not know about you, what would it be?
I think one really, you know, this is another passion of mine and another little mini project, but I think it would, I have one, a title in mind already. I would call it Launch Your Student's Life. And it's more about kind of life beyond high school. As the world has changed and things in, like education have been going more online, you know, you can learn anything online and you can still go to traditional schools. You know, we're seeing a lot of changes in the world where, you know, globalism is really affecting the nature of work. So Launch Your Student's Life is really a book I would want to write about. Maybe it would be to parents and perhaps those emerging adults on, here's kind of some thoughts and some processes and some ideas to help you navigate this new modern life. Because it's not just about, hey, I'm going to college, I'm getting a degree, I'm going to get a good job after I get that degree, and all is great. So different from that. It's not, that journey is not even close to what it is in reality. So it would be a lot of that kind of segments, like how to kind of define and set up that journey for the rest of your life. Like, what's my educational roadmap? What's my career roadmap? What's my lifestyle roadmap? Now I'm sounding like a life coach trying to do everything.
That's okay. You have a lot of interests and you have a lot of passions. And I feel like that just all comes, that's all coming out as you're talking about this. And I think it is so great that you already have a title of the book. Here I am. I thought I had this random question for you and you're like, oh no, I already know. I know exactly.
I don't know if I'm going to write that book, but you know, it's in the heart. Right? I've got to nail this project for our good old pre-OT students out there first. And I'm excited to see where that goes, because as we've talked, you know, there's other struggles once you're a student and beyond that. So I encourage people to take a look at the OT growth, because I'm going to try to go full life cycle on it, where I'll eventually help pre-OT, current OT, and practicing OT, something like those who'd want to start their own creative business or something like that type of outlet as well. So it'll be fun.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, absolutely amazing. I love hearing about everything that you're up to and everything that you kind of have that's in the development stages, right? Like, you are so busy and have so much going on, and yet there's all of these things that you are creating and bringing into the profession. And this was a big reason that I wanted to bring you on the podcast today, because I'm inspired by it, and I'm sure there are going to be so many other people that are really, really inspired by everything that you've been talking about today. And so I always end my podcast with one question. And so I'm going to ask you, Andy, if you only had one word to describe occupational therapy, what would it be?
Oh, good question. I have a word for you. I'm gonna let the crowd ponder for a moment and wonder what it is. But ultimately, I think that word would be perspective. Some people may say meaning or other things, purposeful. But I think perspective for me, because occupational therapists, they have such a unique perspective of a functional, you know, they look at a person through a functional lens. They look at the environment. They look at so many factors that are so easily dismissed. And again, not to downplay any other profession, but there are things that get missed. And sometimes I think OTs are so cool because through functional observation, we are identifying so many things that are improving so many lives. And to me, that's why I say perspective, because I don't find that OT perspective in its wholeness anywhere else. And that was one of the main things that attracted me to the profession, the principles behind OT, that perspective. And, you know, beyond the dignity of the profession, you know, ultimately that extends as well into the creativity of the profession. So, you know, when you look at occupational therapy, the perspective, the reason I choose that, I mean, it encapsulates all of those things in so many different fascinating ways that I just don't see that in other roles in the world. So that's why I chose perspective. And I said, I probably gave you more than what you wanted there.
No, it's absolutely perfect. I think perspective is such a great word. And I really think it actually encompasses a lot of the words that we were talking about today, the meaning behind a lot of the things we were talking about today. And it all just kind of boils down to perspective. And that's just a perfect word. Andy, this has been absolutely amazing. I've loved everything that you've had to say today. And I'm so inspired. And I can't wait to see and to hear about everything that you are up to and where it goes in the future. And so I wanted to give you the opportunity that if people wanted to get in contact with you, where can they find you?
Yeah, so I mean, I think the best place is that website, otgrowth.com. On that website, I'm going to be adding a sign up to a newsletter, and I'm going to make that as valuable as I can. Once that's up there, subscribe to the email list, and that will be one of the best ways.
So I will definitely make sure to link to everything that you've been talking about, the Facebook group and the website. We'll make a link to everything in the show notes.
Feel free to email me as well, andy@otgrowth.com. Be just fine.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, and I wish you luck with everything that you are up to and finishing field work and all of your projects and groups and websites and everything that you've got going on.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'll need it. I need all the votes of confidence I can get. Again, thank you so much.
Hey, before you go, I just wanted to say thanks for listening to today's episode. If you want to further the discussion, go to our website, otforlife.com, and join our Facebook group. If you like us, here are three easy ways to let us know. One, share our podcast with a friend, colleague, or anyone interested in occupational therapy. Two, leave us a review on iTunes or anywhere this podcast is found. Three, subscribe to us so you don't miss out on any upcoming episodes. Thanks again. We'll catch you next time, OT for Lifers.
Oh, hold on one second. I thought I turned my printer off and now it's like making noises at me. Turn off. Turn off. There. I like don't need that going off in the background. you can see how informal I am here.
No, I love it. I love it. At you know, sorry, lots of ums.
We can edit that. Oh, yeah. I want to say most of them don't have any business in, or I can't talk, it's Friday. I'm sorry, I totally butchered that. No, scratch that. It's not like I can't or I won't, or it's not what, hold on, I had this totally in my head and then I got sidetracked when we were talking about moving in with family. What was it that I was trying to say here?
But in saying that, I just kind of lost my train of thought. Where was I? Where was I going?
You were talking about, hold on, let me think. Well, now I don't feel like I'm the only one.
Let me try and talk it through. Let me try and talk it through as well.
Yeah, go for it.
That bugs me that I forgot that.
I'm rubbing off on you. I'm sorry. Okay, wait. Hold on. I'm going to pause you really fast. My husband just got home, and I think he's on the internet, and I'm getting a poor connection. So I'm going to go kick him off the internet. Give me a second.
Okay.
He said no. I think he was lying.
Like, no, I'm off it now.
Yeah, like, now it's fine. So, okay. So, yeah, go ahead. You can start your answer.
I'll let you get going. I think my baby's probably about ready to burst here. He's been super quiet, and I'm like, holy cow, that's a record.
Yeah, but I heard, like, one little thing, and I'm like, I think that was him, but then I was like, that was it.
Yeah, not bad for a 2.5-year-old, so.
Yeah. So, I am, let's see, I am, what was I going to say? I am brain dead right now.